Make your weekend better at Buena Connection Brewing Company. Fresh craft beer, great vibes, and a tap room perfect for kicking back. Grab a pint, bring friends, and enjoy the weekend at Buena Connection Brewing Company. Go to BuenaConnectionBrewing.com. Welcome to Beverage Chronicles, the show where every pour tells a story. I'm your host, Gary Monteroso, inviting you to explore the world of beer, wine, spirits, and beyond. Each week, we sit down with brewers, distillers, and beverage innovators who are shaping the way we enjoy what's in our glass. So, why don't you settle in? The conversations are fresh, the stories are bold, and the next round of Beverage Chronicles starts right now. You know, not too terribly long ago, I recall dining out at a restaurant with a pretty decent craft beer menu, and I opted for a big, bold double IPA. In fact, it was Sierra Nevada's Hazy Little Thing. Now, I have to admit, this style is not for everyone. In fact, I once heard it described as battery acid. I've heard every anti-IPA take imaginable. Too bitter, too harsh, too pretentious. Which is funny, considering IPAs practically run the American craft beer scene. Try finding a brewery that doesn't make one. I'll wait for a while, okay? Why is there all the hate? Well, according to one brewer, it's not that people don't like IPAs, it's that they haven't had the right one yet. And honestly, there's something to that. Unlike wine, beer doesn't have tight stylistic guardrails, which means one IPA can taste wildly different from another. And in less than ideal storage or shipping, gotta remember, warm shelves are the enemy, and you've got a recipe for disappointment. Transition, a bad IPA can ruin your opinion of the whole category. But here's the thing. IPAs today are not what they were 20 years ago. Back in the early days of the craft beer boom, brewers leaned hard into bitterness. The harsher the better. It was almost a badge of honor to drink something aggressively piney and palate-wrecking. These days, the game has changed. Modern IPAs are more balanced, more expressive, and way more approachable. Bitterness, when done right, doesn't linger like a bad memory. It shows up with notes of citrus, pine, or grapefruit, then politely exits, inviting you back for another sip. Even better, there's now an IPA for just about everyone. The classic American IPA, balanced, hop-forward, dependable. Think of Bell's Two Hearted Ale or Cigar City High Lie IPA. There's the old-school West Coast IPA, bold, bitter, piney. Hello to Stone IPA and Sierra Nevada Torpedo. And the hazy New England IPA, that's juicy, soft, and aromatic, like the beer I described, Sierra Nevada's Hazy Little Thing. And for those of us who like to live a little dangerously, there's the double IPA, bigger, boozier, and packed with flavor, like Pliny the Elder. Saying you don't like IPAs because you tried one bitter example is like swearing off all red wine after a single sip of Pinot Noir. There's a whole world in that glass. You just haven't explored it yet. Of course, even the best IPAs can fall flat if it's mishandled. The biggest culprit is oxygen. Oxidation dulls flavors and introduces that dreaded cardboard note. Never a good look in a beer. Your best defense is simple. Keep it cold and drink it fresh. Think of beer like produce. You wouldn't leave lettuce baking in your car all afternoon, right? Same idea here. Buy from a brewery or a trusted shop, refrigerate immediately, and don't let it sit around for months. A good rule of thumb, check the canning date and aim for freshness within a few weeks to a couple of months. When it's finally time to pour, give your IPA a little respect. Use a tulip-shaped glass if you can. It helps concentrate those beautiful aromas, and pour at an angle before straightening the glass to build a nice foamy head. That foam isn't just for looks, it enhances texture and flavor. And while storage should be cold, drinking temperature shouldn't be ice cold. Let it warm slightly. Just a few minutes out of the fridge, and you'll notice flavors open up in a big way. One more thing, keep it out of direct sunlight. UV rays and hops are not friends. After that, there's only one rule left. Finish the beer. Seriously, first impressions can be misleading. The real character of an IPA often reveals itself over a full glass. By the last sip, you might find yourself rethinking everything you thought you knew. And if not, well, that's fine too. But at least you gave it a fair shot. Because at its best, the IPA isn't just a style, it's a gateway. It's the beer that helps spark the craft revolution, pushing drinkers beyond the predictable and into something more adventurous. So next time you're staring into a cooler, take a chance. Grab something hoppy. You might hate it, or you might just discover your new favorite beer.
Look to Australia and New Zealand for excellent wines at sensible prices. This is John Mahoney from New Jersey Wine Radio, reporting for the Beverage Chronicles on two Southern Hemisphere wine growing areas and about grapes that we all love. Most people think the grassy Lederbach Sauvignon Blanc when you say New Zealand, but that's their Marlborough region wines. The central Otago area is the southern tip of the Northern Ireland, and it's producing some great Pinot Noir. Not like the darker California fruit bombs with notes of residual sugar, but more vibrant, high acid, refreshing examples with clean, rich tannins, more similar to France's Burgundy region than most American styles. Pyramid Valley Wines and Byrne College are making superb examples of Pinot Noir designed for meals. The Central Otago, one of the world's most southern wine regions, aside from South Africa's Cape areas, is simply called Central by the locals. I just call it the Otago region of New Zealand. Pinot Noir is being planted all over New Zealand now, and distinct styles are emerging from the Waro Valley, Martinborough, and even in the Sauvignon Blanc region of Marlborough. What will cost close to $100 from France or California usually runs closer to $40 or $50 from New Zealand. Right next door are Australia's great Chardonnay regions of Victoria, McLaren Vale, Clare Valley, and the island of Tasmania. They are reducing the time in oak and making more food-friendly Chardonnay. Of course, their Viognier Rieslings and their newer plantings of the Greek Assyrtiko and the Italian Vermentino and Finos are also extremely well made and still sensibly priced. But you can still get great drinking Chardonnay for under $20 with the same quality that would cost three times that from California or France. The McPherson Victoria 2022 Chardonnay, for example, has been seen for under $18 a bottle. Well, this is John Mahoney, hopefully providing some helpful money-saving wine tips. I've hosted hundreds of wine seminars from basic introduction to the wines or century-old Bordeaux multi-course wine dinners. The one question that always comes up from people who always enjoy wine with meals is, what are some wines that we can really enjoy but can also afford? Look to Australia and New Zealand. In Vino Veritas.
Welcome back to Beverage Chronicles, where we pour the stories behind the spirits. I'm Michelle Lamb, and today we are breaking down exactly how public relations helps beverage brands grow. Not in theory, but on a very real micro level. Whether you're launching a new label, entering a new market, or trying to stand out on a crowded shelf, public relations isn't just about press. It's about positioning, trust, and visibility that converts to sales. Questionable, but hey, possible. So let's uncork the key ways PR supports beverage brands, and I'll break each one down so you can see how it works behind the scenes. PR builds brand credibility before the first sip. Micro-level breakdown? Well, the first one, media mentions signal legitimacy to consumers, buyers, and distributors. Following, A single respected article can influence retailers more than paid ads. And finally, third-party validation builds trust faster than self-promotion. And why does this all matter? Well, people trust what others say about your brand more than what you say yourself. Although it is very true that you also believe in your own brand. And that wraps up today's Beverage Chronicles breakdown on how public relations truly supports beverage brands. From credibility and storytelling to sales and long-term growth. Whether you're a startup distillery or an established brand looking to scale, PR is one of the few tools that builds trust, visibility, and relevance at the same time. I'm Michelle Lamb, and thank you for tuning in, and always keep pouring with purpose and leading with story.
John Mahoney and Michelle Lamb, thanks. Earlier in the show, I talked a little bit about IPAs. I do want to mention over the past 20 years, pale ales, especially IPAs, have gone from craft beer curiosities to one of the most common styles you'll see on store shelves. Hop used to be something a lot of drinkers tried to work around. Now they're part of the appeal, with bitterness almost worn like a badge of honor. And as IPA popularity exploded, we also got a whole new range of takes on the style. West Coast IPAs, hazies, pale ales, double IPAs, imperial IPAs, fruited versions, just about everything else in between. Still, there are a few brands that have become the familiar faces people reach for again and again. And these are the beers you'll find in stores, corner markets, and probably in a friend's fridge too. Names like Bell's, Dogfish Head, Stone Brewing, Sierra Nevada, Goose Island. For a lot of drinkers, these brands are practically shorthand for IPA itself. But here's the real question. If someone says they're loyal to one of these beers, could they actually pick it out in a blind tasting? The editors of Food and Wine put 9 widely available pale ales to the test without knowing which beer was which. The idea was to focus on what most drinkers are actually likely to buy. Beers with national reach, strong sales, and easy availability. They aimed for each brewery's flagship beer, and while the tasting leaned heavily IPA, they left a little room for flexibility. For example, Sierra Nevada has plenty of IPA options now, but its classic pale ale is still the most iconic and easiest to find, so it made sense to include that instead. The beers were poured into numbered plastic cups, because even though that's not the fanciest way to taste beer, it's probably closer to real life than a formal glassware setup. The panel included people with a wide range of beer preferences, some IPA diehards, some not, and they judge each beer on aroma, flavor, body, and overall drinkability. The final ranking came from the weighted scores, with taste and overall impression carrying more weight than aroma alone. When the dust settled, Dogfish Head 60-minute IPA came out on top. Tasters described it as bitter but balanced, with a stronger aroma than most of the others, and a fruit-forward character that made it easy to drink. First released in 2003, it sits at a relatively moderate 6% ABV, which may be part of why it aged so well. It delivers enough bitterness to satisfy IPA fans without going so far that it overwhelms the palate. And for a lot of people, that balance is exactly what makes it stand out. Another favorite was Elysian Space Dust IPA, which earned praise for its boldness. At 8.2% ABV, it has more weight and intensity than many of the others in the tasting, and that made an impression. Tasters liked its mix of tangy and bitter notes, along with a slightly cloudy look and a rich mouthfeel. It's the kind of beer that keeps you coming back for another sip. And then there was Bell's Two-Hearted IPA, which is a true classic. It's been around since 1997 and still has plenty of fans. It's built around 100% centennial hops, which give it citrus and pine notes, along with a clean bitterness that feels familiar without being boring. At 7% ABV, it has enough strength to feel substantial, but it still drinks smoothly. Even after all these years, it remains one of the beers that helped define what a modern IPA could be. And that's this week's episode of Beverage Chronicles. See you next week.